Venerable sirs and friends, as you all know, I'm sure, at present we're in the midst of the holiday season. And inasmuch as we are in the midst of the holiday season, with so many people going away to different parts of the country, even different parts of the world, it is perhaps rather surprising that we have so many people here this morning, in fact staying for the whole day. But nevertheless, perhaps, looking at it from another point of view, it isn't so surprising. Now, some of you I do know, and maybe there are others whom I don't know, will be going away quite shortly to different parts of the continent, even in some cases different parts of Asia. And when we do this, when we leave these familiar shores, when we see, at least metaphorically, weather permitting, the white cliffs of Dover fading behind us, we begin to enter a new world, a foreign world, something strange, something unfamiliar, something unaccustomed. And it's only gradually that we do get used, we do get accustomed to that new world. Probably all of you have been abroad at some time or other, and I'm sure you'll agree with me when I say that it does get quite a little getting used to. Now, the same sort of thing happens when we enter not just a different geographical area, not just a different portion of the earth's surface, but when we enter, or try to enter, a whole new world of thought and of experience. And this is the case for many of us, I know, when we come into contact for the first time with Buddhism, with the teaching of the Buddha. Quite a number of you, I know, came into contact with Buddhism, first of all, through one or another of our weekly meditation classes. I'm quite sure that when you came along first, the first time you attended one of those classes, there must have been much which seemed strange, which seemed unfamiliar, or which even seemed rather bizarre. Some of you may recollect that your first impression was of candles burning on the altar in front of the image, and no doubt you noticed that there was a strange aroma, a strange perfume, which you eventually identified as incense. And you saw, no doubt, different people sitting in what must have seemed all sorts of peculiar postures, usually cross-legged upon the floor, some sitting on little stools. And on occasions, you might have seen one or two people sitting with their face to the wall. And not only that, but if you'd stayed long enough, if you'd stuck it out, as it were, you would have become aware sometimes of chanting going on in an unfamiliar, in fact, an unknown language. Rhythmical chanting. And eventually you might have discovered that this chanting was of a text in an ancient, in fact dead, Indian language called Sanskrit. And if you had persisted in your inquiries, if you'd asked about it, you would eventually have discovered that what was being chanted at the beginning of every meditation session in Sanskrit was something known as the Heart Sutra. And you probably would have realized, from the way in which you were told this, that this Heart Sutra was very important. For some reason or other, you weren't quite sure what or why. So this morning, in the course of this talk, I'm going to try to clear up the mystery, at least to some extent. I can't hope in the course of 1 hour or so to do more than just lift, perhaps, a corner of the veil. And this morning I shall be having very much in mind the needs of those who are comparatively new to Buddhism and who have not, perhaps, read the Heart Sutra in translation. At the same time, I hope that this talk may be useful not only to beginners, not only to newcomers, but even to those who already are quite familiar with the work, at least verbally, who might have read it already quite a number of times. I do know, in fact, that even some of those who have read the Heart Sutra, who've heard it chanted perhaps scores of times, who've gone through the translations, who've puzzled over them, are still not quite sure, not quite clear what the Heart Sutra is all about.